always be 17. We pass a toppled building, its rubble being eaten by weeds and vines. Apparently, after the quake, some parts of California were worth rebuilding and others were not. Lily comments as we pass, forgetting our agreed silence.
Are you afraid?
I ask.
She feigns surprise.
Of earthquakes? No. When it's my time to go, I go.
Is she really that confident? Just where does she think she's going?
Go where? I ask, enjoying pushing her.
She stares at me, longer than is safe when driving 50 miles per hour.
Never mind, she answers, and looks back at the road.
I look straight ahead again, too. I know what go means to her, but I wanted her to say it. Die. Go.
To heaven? Is that where she thinks she's going? Is she really sure of going to a place that isn't even on a map? And how can she be sure she'd like it when she got there?
But that's Lily. One big question mark.
We return to our silence. There are no more comments about tumbled buildings, who we are, were, or the strain between us. We return to something unnatural and painful and familiar, the way Lily and I are now. The mission comes sooner than I think. We are here, and I long for more of the strained silence. It doesn't make sense, but I suppose in my new world, it does. I follow Lily down the same path as last time, through the heavy wooden gate, the cemetery, and finally through the church that leads to the inner courtyard where I am to meet Ethan. When she opens the door into the church, an unexpected wave of chanting stops us. A choir of pink-cheeked boys lift their voices as a priest seems to pull the music from their throats with the urging of his hands. Lily immediately crosses herself and closes her eyes. The echo of their voices makes me stop, too. It feels like it is shaking something inside of me. Something that aches.
Come along, Lily whispers. They're practicing.
We cross through the church, the priest acknowledging our presence with a nod, but not stopping from his work. Lily opens the opposite door, and we exit to the courtyard.
Ethan is bringing you home, so once I finish my business with Father Rico, I'll be going.
She turns to leave. I am still filled with the sound of the boys' clear voices. I don't want to let it go. I don't want to let Lily go. She's already walking away.
I heard you, I say.
She stops and turns around.
Crying, I add. When I was in a coma, I heard you cry out to Jesus. For me.
I thought you should know that people in a coma can hear. Her fingers tighten around the bag in her hands. Her eyes are fixed on me, but she doesn't speak.
Did you know I heard you? I ask.
She opens her mouth, but her words seem to be stuck in her throat.
No, she finally says. I didn't know.
She swipes a strand of hair from her cheek.
I need to go, she says. I need to go.
Ethan is not in the courtyard as promised, but after several misdirected attempts, I eventually find him at the lavanderia, the ancient washing basins next to the gardens. I don't even know what I will be doing for my community project. Ray just seemed to be satisfied that I could work with Ethan until I found a project of my own. We must devote 8 hours per week to it.
Finally, he says when I arrive.
But before he spits out his cold greeting, I catch something.
A smile?
Not so much around the mouth, but in the eyes. I am learning amazingly fast. He probably doesn't even know I saw.
I got a lecture this morning, thanks to you, I tell him.
How so?
Apparently, dickhead means more than annoying.
You called someone that?
My grandmother.
He winces. You didn't know what it meant?
I told you I've forgotten a lot. That's assuming I ever even had that lovely word in my vocabulary.
He grunts and runs his eyes over me.
I'm guessing you did.
He wastes no more time on chat and shows me what is to occupy me for the next 4 hours. Dirt. I will be shoveling dirt, spoonful by spoonful. The lavanderia is undergoing restoration to remove a thick layer of dirt that covers its northern end, brought about by some long-ago mudslide. The dirt must be removed carefully so as not to damage the ancient stones beneath it. We work side by side, using flat-bottom trowels and occasionally shears to cut the vines and roots that weave through the blanket of dirt. I notice he works close by my side, even though there's a long wall of dirt to remove.
So, why is your grandmother a dickhead? Annoying, he asks.
I'm relieved that he breaks our silence first. Because she said we shouldn't be dating.
Oh my God, Jenna, stupid. Stupid.
We're dating?
No, my mother thought...
Your mother thinks we're dating? Just because I'm giving you a ride home?
No, well... Yes, never mind. Help.
Every word seems to bury me further. Was I always this inept? He says. He grins and stabs his trowel in for another load of dirt. We work for another silent few minutes, shoulder to shoulder, on our hands and knees, being careful not to dig too deeply, and then he sits back, resting one arm on his knee.
So, why doesn't your grandmother like me dating you, other than... I teach you bad words.
I drop my trowel. We're not dating, and it's not you, it's me.
She doesn't like you? I thought grandmothers had to like you. It's a law or something.
He's right. It should be a law. Or maybe it is for most people. Hearing him say it out loud makes it more painful. So obvious. Of course a grandmother should like you. And I wonder once again if Lily has good reason not to. Somehow, down deep, I think she does. I think of Kara and Locke. I ache for them. Does it have something to do with them?
Hurry, Jenna.
I hear their voices like they're whispering into my ear right now. I don't have a good response for Ethan. I feel like I should cry, but there are no tears. Not even a lump in my throat. I try to shrug off our conversation like it doesn't matter. I can't explain it. I guess I'm just special. Ethan looks at me like he's trying to decide something. His brown eyes make everything inside of me shift. He finally flicks some dirt from his fingers at me and smiles.
Nah, Jenna, you're nothing special.
In an instant, my insides swell. And I can't do anything but stand there, returning his stare. And even though I should be embarrassed, I am embarrassed, I can't look away either. He moves first, awkwardly returning to his knees, and I join him, shoulder to shoulder, snipping, clearing, and scooping a spoonful of dirt at a time. The sun is warm on my back. From time to time, I think I hear the chanting echoes from the church float on the breeze all the way down to the gardens. But Ethan says that's impossible. We're too far away. But I'm sure I hear it. Or maybe the angelic tune is simply stuck in my head. I decide I like shoveling dirt. I like the garden sounds and the mindless repetition. It's like... It's the first time in weeks that my brain truly has been able to rest from trying to remember. For hours we work. Ethan stands now and then, stretching his back, rubbing his knees. But I don't tire.
You're a horse, he says.
And you, I want to find the right word, are not. Not much of a word, but the emphasis seems to have hit him nonetheless. He makes a show of rubbing his knees one last time and returns to my side. I smile, glad that my hair conceals my face. Long stretches of time go by where we don't talk as we work. I listen to the birds in the garden, the chink of our trowels, the trickling of water from a nearby hose, and mostly to the voices in my own head. You're fitting in, Jenna. You're loved, Jenna. You're normal, Jenna. You are almost whole, Jenna. And mostly, I believe them.
Do you know him?
I glance to where Ethan is looking. At the top of the stairs that lead to the gardens, a squat man is watching us. Just as I look up, he clicks a picture and then walks away.
No, I answer. I've never seen him before.
Or maybe I have and I just don't remember him?
Probably a tourist, Ethan says. Usually they just visit the mission, not way down here. Or maybe Father Rico sent someone to check up on us.
Maybe, I say. Trigger. Sliding into Ethan's truck, I remember. It's the gray leather. I had a car, but no license. I didn't have a license. Mother and father wouldn't let me get one. Why would they give me a car, but not let me drive it? I remember racing down the road in my car. Hurry, Jenna. I did. And Kara and Locke were with me. 100 points. I slide across the seat of Ethan's truck to make room for Alice. We are picking her up from her community project before we head back to the village charter. We're outside the offices and labs adjacent to the Del Oro University Medical Center. Besides coming here for therapy, she also volunteers for the Del Oro Ethics Task Force. She gathers materials for review and helps process the numerous checks and balances that monitor their research activities.
Grunt work, Ethan called it when he described it to me.
How could it be any more grunt work than spooning dirt? And I remember the way Alice spoke of it a few days ago. It's important to her. She's passionate. And I think she would do it even if Ray did not require a community volunteer project. She's accepted the loss of her limbs, but blames an out-of-control medical system for the outcome. She thinks if someone had regulated antibiotics long ago, when they first knew about the dangers of overuse, she and millions like her would have had a different fate. And now she seems determined that no new medical injustices will be unleashed on the world. When he talks about Alice, Ethan's voice takes on an edge I hadn't heard before. Like he feels her injustices too. Does he care about her? How much does he care? Or does he have injustices of his own? I know nothing about him, really. Why is he at the village charter? Ethan said they all had their reasons for being there. Alice talked about her physical limitations. Gabriel said he had an anxiety disorder and the small environment was more comfortable for him. But Ethan never revealed his reasons.
Can you take these?
Alice hands me the braces that still steady her, and she slides in next to me.
2 more weeks, and these will be gone. At least that's what they tell me.
Her eyes sparkle, and her words come out in a continuous, excited stream.
They uploaded some new technology that will help the prosthetics anticipate my own balance system. It will supposedly read nerve signals from my brain and learn from them. They said to walk as much as possible to speed up the learning process. Imagine that. I've got smart legs.
She shoots a warning look at Ethan.
Don't say a word.
Me?
Ethan says sweetly.
I thought you were here for your volunteer project, I say. That too, but the therapy and the ethics offices are in the same complex, so I get it all done the same days. How's your project go?
Shoveling dirt? She's a horse, Ethan says, repeating his assessment of me.
I liked it, I tell her. It's not exactly a mental challenge, well, except maybe for Ethan. But Father Rico was very grateful. Ethan jogs the steering wheel to register my point, and Alice laughs.
The mission's a good cause. They don't have funds, so without volunteers, they'd never be able to keep it up. It has a lot of history that's important. It was my second choice right after the ethics office.
Who runs the ethics office? The hospital? I ask.
Are you kidding? The hospital hates the ethics office, but they'd never admit it. You've never heard of the FSEB?
I try to scan my pathetic excuse of memory. It seems like I should know it. Like, it's almost within my reach.
It's not another bad word, if that's what you're thinking, Ethan says.
It's the Federal Science Ethics Board, Alice says. They run the office. They're the yay and nay of all research, and a lot of medical procedures, too. If you don't file all the forms...